Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott, and I'm here with Mark Pascal. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant and the new Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in downtown New Brunswick, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every day from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, and you can reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, and we're podcasting all around the world, so keep listening. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
Doing good.
We have some happy things to talk about later in the show. But I have read some articles recently that I found really disturbing. What's new, right? No news is good news.
It's a lot of disturbing stuff we're doing out there.
I have never much cared for cooking in nonstick pans. I don't like it. I don't see the point of it.
The point of it is if you're making eggs or you're making something like that, it's
But you have to be so careful when cleaning it. It's my experience that, you know, any time that you bring Teflon or nonstick pans into the house of any sort, that they wind up being ruined shortly thereafter anyway, and then they got a scratch in it, it's nonstick anyway. I've never liked it.
There's new pans called hard anodized steel, and they are not Teflon.
Right.
And you can use metal in them, and they're very effective, and they have a lot of the same effects as Teflon
pans. I like steel pans. I like cast iron pans. I've never really enjoyed cooking on Teflon pans, and I'm happy now that I've never really enjoyed cooking on Teflon pans. Because there have been a number of studies out, and quite a bit of controversy growing up around DuPont's production of Teflon. And I was unaware until you brought to my attention that there is sort of a widespread, definite possibility that Teflon can do some damage to you. Even DuPont doesn't disagree with this, and let me tell you what I mean by that. There are these things called PFOAs, which I'm not going to try and pronounce what they are, but they're likely a carcinogen in human beings. So say many of the
perfluorooctanoic acid.
You're the best, Mr. Chemical Guy. So perfluorooctanoic acids are likely human carcinogens, according to several study groups. Now, it's used in making Teflon. Mm-hmm. DuPont says once the Teflon's made, it's gone. Don't worry about it. But even DuPont says that if you overheat a Teflon pan, they say to 660 degrees, which is not impossible to reach on your kitchen stove at all, it releases toxic...
It's pretty hot, but not impossible to reach on your kitchen stove.
It releases toxic gases that can injure pet birds and cause flu-like symptoms in humans at abnormally high temperatures, a condition that the company says these flu-like symptoms can last a couple of days. Other reports say the fumes can kill birds.
Yeah, I had a friend recently tell me that they can't keep their parakeets in the kitchen, that they've been told to not keep their pet parakeets in the kitchen because the fumes from
the Teflon
cooking on things like Teflon could kill the birds.
Okay, you know what the coal miners did when the parakeets died, canaries died?
They got out of the mine.
They
got out. Get out.
I have advice for your friend. Put the parakeets back in the kitchen, throw out the Teflon pans.
Throw the Teflon
Are you
away.
Kidding me? Now, there are several groups that say, the Environmental Working Group, a nonprofit environmental research and advocacy organization, says that at 325 degrees or a medium flame, that Teflon begins to emit these noxious gases. Are you kidding me?
325 is a cooking temperature everybody cooks at.
Okay. DuPont says it's 660 degrees. I say again, are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's not a risk I want to take.
You're telling me that a pan, if it gets up at 660 degrees, that the manufacturer tells me that it's going to cause my bird to die and me to get flu-like symptoms, but don't worry about it, I'll be better in a couple of days? Are you kidding me? Out of the house with the Teflon pans.
You know the irony of what you're saying right now, Francis?
What?
You know what I recently did?
What, you bought a bird?
No, I recently threw out my last Teflon pan.
Oh, my God.
No joke. I bought hard anodized steel. I'm done with Teflon. I don't need to be taking any risks like that over non-stickedness.
I mean, okay? I just, I mean, and of course, Teflon DuPont is denying that there's any problem. Listen to this. In the 50 years that Teflon's been made, for example, this is from an article that I took from the New York Star Ledger here in Jersey. In the 50 years that Teflon's been made, for example, little's been done to assess whether it affects human health, even though the chemical is present in the blood of more than 90% of Americans, according to samples taken from blood banks by the 3M company.
90% of Americans.
And they don't think it's bad for us, but they've never tested it.
By the way, and 96% of children.
Are you kidding me? Are you just kidding me? You can't cook on something else? I know you're not kidding
me. Well, we can. But you know, the disturbing part is, and what a lot of these articles that we're reading are saying is, you know, nobody's ever had to test these things. They just...
But you put them on the market, and then afterwards you find out if they're good or bad for you.
Yeah.
Asbestos. You put it on the market, and then 10 years later when people start to get sick, then you do a study that takes 10 years.
50 years later.
Right.
And
so,
after a lot of people got cancer because of it.
And I just... Yes, of course, you should have to prove that a new product is safe, especially for the use to which you put it, really safe, before you put it on the market. Listen, somebody's taking the risk when you have a new product. It's either the producer has to take the risk or the consumer has to take the risk.
You know what I really don't understand, though, and this is the truth. If a kid's toy has a piece that breaks off too easily that could become a choking hazard, that item's recalled in minutes.
Yeah.
From the time the second kid it gets to the hospital, that item's recalled in minutes.
Two issues, Mark. One is that when that kid's toy, you have the problem with that kid's toy, the toy manufacturer doesn't have so much invested in that one particular kid's toy that he's going to throw $600 million at trying to keep it on the market no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that's a very dramatic – in America, we seem to be – inured to the slow, you know, that, okay, eventually this will cause cancer in people. Eventually this will cause emphysema in people. Eventually this will, you know, even if we can prove that it will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you're like, oh, I can't believe it's something in the water. I can't smell it. I can't taste it. I don't see it.
Right, and I drink it 10,000 times, and you never know which time is going to be the one that...
Right, so if you kill 500 kids over a period of time after they become adults, and you can't say exactly... how that was completely unrelated to any other thing. Now you got two kids that choked to death. I mean, that's, you know,
right.
We take
action. I guess you're right. You have a kid right there.
Look, here's the deal, everybody.
Proof is right in front of you.
Here's the deal, everybody. Teflon, throw it out. aluminum, don't cook in aluminum. There are a lot. First of all, it turns your sauces gray anyway. Cheap pans are aluminum. It doesn't do such a great job cooking. It's not so nonstick.
It's really not nonstick. Aluminum means lots of scrubbing later on.
And it just, you know, it's a cheap pan, and there are lots of concerns people have over aluminum. I'm not as familiar with that. Steel. We cook in steel.
Mm-hmm.
We cook in cast iron. I know it's heavy to work with. I love cooking in cast iron.
The problem is with cast iron, Francis, if you don't use them all the time, and I had a set of cast iron pots and pans, and the problem is that pan that you only use every once in a great while,
right.
It rusts up. It takes a lot of work to get the rust out.
It needs to be seasoned. The pans, if you use them all the time, need to be seasoned.
It's easy if you use them all the time. If you have that one favorite pan that's cast iron, that's easy because you just oil it every time you use it. You use it once every other day. The pan never rusts. It's in beautiful condition. The more you use it, the better it gets.
Well, and I also say, I like cast iron. I have a couple of cast iron pans I use all the time. Love them, but I use them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is you can use steel, which can be very lightweight. And the other thing, if you like that heavy cookware like I do, is there's a company called Crusay, and they make the stainless steel that's coated with porcelain. Really, really fabulous. Safe for you. Safe for your family.
There's also another pan that black steel.
Oh, I love black steel pans.
It's a little thinner.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking for something that will transfer heat very, very quickly, black steel will do that. But it's not as attractive as your aluminum or stainless steel pans. The pans turn black.
And copper, but you have to make the copper is not aluminum on the inside. Copper pots work really well, but they're very expensive if you want something
great heat transfer.
You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott.
We have with us a guest today, our friend Anthony Giglio, who is the reviewer for the New York Sun. He's also the reviewer for New Jersey Life. He's also the wine columnist for Boston Magazine. He's written several books, including Cocktails in New York, which is going strong out there right now. And he's come with us to talk about food writing, criticism, and cocktails. Hello, Anthony.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Anthony, you got to cut down on the amount of stuff you're doing. The intro takes too long, dude.
And I'm a new dad on top of it.
Yes, you got it all going on. Had a baby about 2 weeks before I did.
By the way, and those of you who think that being a food critic is all fun and games, it's a lot of fun and games, but it's really kind of tough. And I think that it's also really tough when you have a kid because you've got to be out reviewing restaurants in the evening. I mean, doesn't that take a huge toll on your family life there, Anthony?
Yeah.
Can't you just do that 9 to 5, man? Come on, you review breakfast places.
Yeah, or try and go like at the grandma hour at 6 p.m. so I could be home by 9.
Right.
The restaurants like that. You really feel like you're part of the atmosphere.
I'd imagine a dinner at home with your wife and kid is probably a rare treat for you.
Yeah, it is. And I had one tonight,
Fabulous.
Last night, I should say. Listen, I was going to tell you this, very funny. I actually did go out for a dinner recently at 6 p.m. because that's the only reservation I could get because, you know, being a little less organized these days, I'm not calling 2 weeks in advance like I should.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And they gave me a 20% discount on my check.
Are you
serious? Mortified.
Grandma.
Never it's official. Happened.
You are 75 years old.
I had a blue plate. I didn't even know it.
That's fabulous. That's really, really fabulous. You know, I think it must be very frustrating for you, Anthony, because here you are. I mean, you're a very well-respected journalist. You're an expert on food and wine, and you travel around to all these places, but you must do so anonymously. Whereas when Mark and I do get the occasion to go out to other places, we're like, hey, restaurant guys are here.
Don't
you want to do something special for us?
Don't you want to show me the best of everything you have? Because I go out to dinner like once a month because I got a newborn, and I want it to be really, really nice.
I go out all the time, too, but I like going to places where I'm recognized as a regular, and it strikes me that you have exactly the opposite sort of constraint on you. Don't you find that frustrating sometimes?
Yeah, I mean, I miss all the great opening parties. I mean, because before I was a critic, I was just, you know, I was a regular, you know, food and wine reporter writing for a whole bunch, you know, freelance for everybody. So, I mean, I am known out there in that light, in that respect. And then as I became more involved with the criticism, I had to become more and more pulled back. So, like, I still get invited to everything. I can't go to anything.
Right.
Well, that's okay. I could be Anthony Gillian.
Exactly.
That's no sweat, man.
Who's the guy with the funny glasses and the beard and mustache?
Do you want to hear something funny?
Yeah.
My email address has an underscore between Anthony and Gillio at yahoo.com. And a ton of mail goes to Anthony Gillio, one word, at yahoo.com. And people say to me, oh, I sent you an email. I'm like, you must have not forgot the underscore. You put a dash. So I thought about it, and I sent emails to both Anthony Gillio at Yahoo with no dash, and then with a dash from me introducing myself, saying, "Guys, I think you're getting my mail.
Please
and
forward.
If we could make it, if we could be friends, I'd like you to send it back." You know what? I got from Anthony Gillio a letter from Boston. The other Anthony Gillio lives in my market.
Are you serious?
That's funny.
And he said, "You finally caught up with me, man. I've been using your name everywhere."
You know,
we have a guy who used to work for us named Jorge Posada. Used to get the best reservations everywhere. Like, yes, Jorge Posada, here's my credit card. I'm Jorge Posada.
Well, and what we would do is when we went out with Jorge would make the reservation, and then we'd all show up first, and Jorge would come in last, so we'd be, like, sitting at the table when they came
right.
in.
You always
the
get
best the, table.
You always get the best table, exactly.
Because what are they going to do, move you?
Look at the view here. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm Jorge Posada.
Fantastic.
You recently won, the Society of Professional Journalists recently gave you an award for a review you did of a place close to home in Hoboken. Why don't you tell us about that, Anthony?
The award was in 2004 that I just got in May. For reviewing Augustino's, which I thought was probably one of the best Italian restaurants I've ever eaten at, not only in New Jersey, but probably anywhere on this continent where I've gone for a solid Italian meal without any fanfare. And I just thought the place has so much character. It's so true to old Hoboken, not new yuppie Hoboken, that it really made me happy, and I wanted to go back. And that's one of the caveats of this job. I never get to go back anywhere
yeah.
that I want to because I'm so busy planning ahead for the new places.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I only made it back to Augustino's a year later this summer to finally just have a meal with my parents on our own to celebrate the birth of our son.
Now,
without the stress of reviewing.
Now, when you talk about the fact that you like the restaurant, and I think I want to ask you about this restaurant, Augustina's in Hoboken, we can recommend it, but we've got just a little more than a minute. What about the writing of this piece do you think struck the people at the Society of Professional Journalists that you got this award for? This is such an outstanding piece of journalism.
It was the most irreverent piece I've ever written. the host that I featured, the wife of the owner, speaks like you know, a spaghetti western madam.
Oh my!
Yeah, she's got quite a vocabulary on her, and she's famous for this and notorious for this. But she's just very funny, very down to earth, very Hudson County. If you grew up there, you'd know what I mean. Like old style, you know, blue collar, really funny, down to earth. But she says it like it is, and she has most people doing double takes and then laughing uproariously because she's just that funny.
Well, I think that it must be very interesting. You must go to a lot of really terrible meals as part of your job, and I think it's interesting that it's not only the fancy places that really, well, strike your fancy.
Exactly. This proved it, because a lot of people said to me, are you kidding me? You gave that place a great review, and they don't even have tablecloths. And it's true. It's like an Italian grandma place with, you know, Mylar tops on the tables with doilies underneath them.
But I think a lot of it is taking things at their word. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25. You're back with The Restaurant Guys. Our guest today is Anthony Giglio. Anthony Giglio is from New Jersey Life magazine and the New York Sun, where he's a restaurant reviewer. He's the author of a new book called Cocktails in New York and a general freelance writer, also the wine columnist for Boston Magazine. And we were talking about an article that he recently won an award from the Society of Professional Journalists for his review of Augustino's restaurant in Hoboken. Now, the point that we left on was that it doesn't need to be a fancy, high-end, expensive place to really get a great review from you.
No, it doesn't.
How do you justify that?
Well, I mean, like, you know, what I liked about New Jersey Monthly when we used to review was that, you know, it was the overall, you know, star score that we gave was represented by food, service, decor, wine list, and value. Mm-hmm. So, like, you had to add that whole equation up every single time to come up with an overall score. And you know, taken in pieces, it's not just about, you know, the food or this or that or the curtains or the flowers. You know, we're not looking for the Michelin stars here. What I'm looking for is, you know, really good food, really good service, and a great atmosphere. You know, would I have loved, you know, a more comfortable chair? Sure. But I wasn't uncomfortable at all in Augustino's. Would I have liked tablecloths? Yeah, sure. But I didn't mind the plastic tablecloth because it just reminded me of a more casual place. I just thought the food, especially in the context of all the reviews that issue were Italian, it was by far the most Italian food I've ever tasted outside of Italy versus Italian American.
Anthony, who are you kidding? The plastic tabletop reminded you of Nona's house. Okay,
exactly, exactly. Except it was Mylar, so when I stuck to it, I didn't pull it back with me.
Well, you know, I think that what we're talking about though is I have a lot of respect for when restaurant criticism takes an establishment on its own terms and judges it for what it offers. And, you know, if you got that Mylar tablecloth and that uncomfortable chair in a place that was costing you $120 a person for dinner, it's not acceptable.
Different expectation. But also, I don't think it's just the price expectation that we're talking about here. What we're talking about is the expectation of, I want a great hot dog to be a great hot dog. I want a great hamburger to be a great hamburger. I want great country Italian or Brooklyn Italian to be great Brooklyn Italian.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. So, right. So, in the context of these reviews, which were all Italians, this was by far the most exceptional to me. And again, there may be people who say, "Oh, but they don't even have flowers on the tables. They don't have great lighting. You know, there's ceiling fans that are, you know, flickering all night. Blah, blah, you know, whatever." I say the overall package, including the atmosphere and the host, who is free dinner theater for a lot of people, I thought it was by far one of the my most favorite reviews I've written in the 10 years at New Jersey Monthly I was there.
You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey, 1450. WCTC with The Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott, and I'm here with Mark Pascal. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, and soon, Catherine Lombardi's restaurant opening in New Brunswick, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every day from 11 a.m. to 12 noon. and also reach us through www.restaurantguysradio.com, where we also podcast to the universe. Today, our guest is Anthony Giglio. Anthony Giglio reviews for the New York Sun and New Jersey Life magazine. Prior to that, he was for 10 years the reviewer for New Jersey Monthly magazine. He's the author of a new book called Cocktails in New York. He's a general freelance food writer, and he's also the wine columnist for Boston Magazine. And we're talking with him today about some recent awards that he's won for food journalism and some articles that he's written. Now, Anthony, before the break, we were talking about taking restaurants on their own terms. And one, you can have a great restaurant that's maybe a $15 an entree casual place that you'll give a great review to. You might give an expensive restaurant that's $100 a dinner, and, you know, sets up higher expectations but doesn't quite meet them, a lower review. When you reviewed for New Jersey Monthly, they did give out stars. How do you find that stars work into that paradigm or that equation? Because, you know, we don't see 4-star hot dog stands. You know what I mean? There's a certain level of expectation when a place, whether it's in the New York Times or in a place that gives out stars, when you talk about a 4-star restaurant, we're at that point really talking about a high-end restaurant that does everything perfectly. How do you skew that star scale?
You know, it came up at every annual planning meeting what we were going to do. Given that we only had, you know, let's say 12 issues, and you know, we considered ourselves competing with the Times, which came out weekly, and we were always scooped because of, you know, a 2- and 3-month lead. But looking at how we were trying to be competitive and how we would rate people, like, so for instance, people would write in and say, why don't you ever rate the best diners, which New Jersey is known for its great diners.
Right.
So when we did the great diners, we did it, I think, probably 6 or 8 years ago. We didn't do it again because a lot of people wrote in and said, stop wasting your space. We need to know where the great restaurants are.
Right.
But we did, you know, like,
people eat at diners 5 times more than they eat at great restaurants.
Right. I'm just telling you what they wrote into. You know, we try and listen to, you know, a majority of the mail that comes in, you know, whatever people are saying, we might take the pulse of it. But what we did was we doubled up. So we did, like, I think 10 diners instead of a normal 4 restaurants a month. Mm-hmm. And we gave them coffee cups instead of stars to show people that we're obviously not saying this is a, you know, the TikTok won, as I think it always wins in every competition. The TikTok got 4 coffee mugs. And, you know, that was to say, like, it for, you know, for breakfast or for diner, for 24-hour, you know, how you doing, hun, service, the TikTok wins hands down.
You just said, how you doing, hun, service.
That's what we were looking for.
Yeah.
That's for the Jersey Diner.
Who gets the decaf?
Yeah. Where the coffee cup comes with a saucer on top of it.
Can I warm your coffee, hun?
You know,
come on.
You know what my grandmother used to do with the coffee that spilled into the saucer?
What?
Put it right back into the cup.
I'm not going to go there.
That's what it's there for. Yeah, well, anyway, the Irish, what are you going to do with this? We can serve. There is a problem. I mean, one of the things that's very interesting is I will often read a 2-star review of a restaurant and think, you know, I want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll sometimes read a 3-star review of a restaurant and think, wow, you gave them 3 stars, but I don't want to go there. You know, so I think that within each rating, there's then the text portion of, you know, 4 stars. It's like 4 very broad categories. It's not even like a 100-point scale.
But part of the problem, I think, is that we pigeonhole restaurants into these stars. And I mean, I know a lot of people who look at the stars and then read or decide that whether they're going to read or not read the article based on the stars, the star level.
Which is very sad.
You know, this reminds me.
It's really sad for you.
Well, no, it's sad for the restaurants that get ignored.
It is. Well, I remember, you know, I have to say, we had Ruth Reichel on the show a couple of weeks back, and she was great, and I think that some of the stuff that she did when she was she's editor-in-chief of Gourmet Magazine now. She was a longtime restaurant critic for the New York Times, and she did some really great things. And one of the things that she really had a problem with the star system, and I think for very good reasons, but I will always remember one review she gave that I thought was really unfortunate, and it was for a restaurant on 10th and 7th in New York, and it was called Die Zette. And she said something like, she gave this really glowing review, and she gave him 1 star.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, why would I give – you may wonder why I would give a restaurant that I've said so many great things about, you know, 1 star. It's because Die Zette wouldn't want more than 1 star. Now I'm a restaurateur. I got some news for you, Ruth.
I guarantee you they wanted at least 3.
Because they probably would have been happy with 2, but they did go out of business about a year later. So, I mean, there are implications to these things, and I think it was very interesting – I know you're really an expert on Italian food and Italian wine in particular, Anthony. And the reviews, there were reviews where you differed. You gave a pretty good review to Scott Conant's new place called Alto in Manhattan, which is has a lot of aspirations being very fine dining Italian. And in the spirit of full disclosure, a good friend of ours is the sommelier there, is Eric Zillier.
It's not really full disclosure since Eric's been on the show.
Oh, yeah, right, exactly.
Here's the asterisk on that comment. I didn't know Eric was there. I still thought he was at Veritas.
Yep.
He blew my cover.
Oh, man. Nice. That's his job, baby.
that is our job.
Did he know that you were with the New York Sun, or did he just know you from social?
Yeah, he knew I was there officially. Because I had a fake name and the whole deal. And
a mustache and glasses.
And he was like, oh, hello. Yeah, I took my wig off, kissed him hello. And
So the striking part is your review differs markedly from much of the other New York press. And I'd like you to talk to us about how reviews can differ. And what do you think that you saw differently at Alto in New York than some of these other reviewers? And I think there are maybe some broader issues at work here than just about this one little restaurant.
I think the problem with Alto for the media, you know, is that it was set up, and this was put out there by, you know, the buzz, was that Conant was going, who, you know, is a darling of the chef world, won the Food & Wine magazine Best New Chef last year, got great reviews for his other restaurant, his first restaurant, L'Impero, and he set out to create what he wanted to make the first four-star restaurant in New York. And everyone knew that when he...
First
four-star Italian in New York City. There are none. And... Even though Le Cirque is owned by Maccioni, it's French. I mean, all the great ones are French, or some Franco-Asian concoction or something. But all the great restaurants, and I think there's only 8 4 stars, none are Italian. None come close. And when he set out to do this, I think it really threw the gauntlet down, and that's what made the critics come at him.
You think they're mad at him for trying to do something that hasn't been done before.
Did you read Adam Platt's in New York Magazine?
Yeah.
I actually did.
The first line, as with diva opera stars, there's a certain ritual sameness to the trajectories of aspiring four-star chefs in New York. It's a how dare you intro. You know where it's going immediately by the whole diva thing? Mm-hmm. They're calling Scott Conant a diva. And I have to admit, I don't know every chef in New York. I don't know every chef in New Jersey. And that's, I prefer it that way. This way I don't feel bad if I don't say anything nice about them. I know Scott Conant. I know that he's not a diva. He's the furthest guy from a diva out of all the chefs in New York that I do know. I think that this was really, really bitchy.
I think, actually, I read that review, and I remember that they said in the review, this is Adam Platt's review in New York Magazine, he said, Alto is Italian also, but the tone is elevated to such a refined degree that you might have a difficult time knowing it. So what is he saying? He's saying that Italian food... if it's really good, it's almost not Italian, that there's something inherently about Italian food that's not good?
Well, yeah. I don't understand. We can have fine dining Spanish. We can have fine dining Portuguese. We can have fine dining Indian at Tabla.
Yeah, but there's no four-star restaurants in those categories.
But we can't have fine dining Italian? But they gave him 2 stars. Okay, Times gave him 2 stars.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it goes back to what I've always heard from colleagues, that Italian is so wonderfully simple. You know, there's that whole, you know, it's all about the Tuscan simplicity. You know, the Tuscan drives me crazy. Everybody who's never been to Italy thinks everything's Tuscan.
Right.
Or they could divide the whole country of 21 states into northern and southern Italian food.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But that everything is, you know, the beauty of Italian cooking is its simplicity. You know what? That's a crock. Because anybody who knows what Italian food is about, I wrote this an upcoming review, that's going to be New Jersey Life, is that, like, Francophiles and food snobs often dismiss with, you know, quaint smirks Italian cuisine as simple because it doesn't always demand hours of preparation and layer upon layer of execution. And my problem is that you can't, you know, I wouldn't just ever dare to generalize about any country's cuisine because it's really regionality, not nationality.
We're going to talk more with Anthony Giglio defending the cuisine of his ancestors, right? We're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. You're back with the Restaurant Guys. We're here talking with Anthony Giglio. Anthony Giglio is a reviewer for the New York Sun and New Jersey Life magazine. He was a reviewer for New Jersey Monthly magazine for 10 years. He's also the wine columnist for Boston magazine, the author of a new book called Cocktails in New York, and a freelance writer and one of our favorite food journalists who's won several awards for his writing about food. And we were talking about the critical view of Italian cuisine, and you were sort of defending Italian cuisine against the prejudices that somehow French cuisine can be elevated to four-star level, American cuisine can be elevated to a four-star level, but when someone tries to present four-star Italian food in America, it's sort of seen as quaint.
Well, because I think most people see Italian food as simple, and it is simple. If you cook a box of Ronzoni and pour some Prego on it, it's really simple.
But where do you think this came from, Anthony? There are a lot of really intelligent food writers who know about food and who even cook, who carry that same prejudice. I mean, Frank Bruni is Italian. He's the New York Times restaurant critic who gave these guys 2 stars, which is, you know, for what they're trying to do is a bit of a pan. And he really did sort of mock them in the same way that Adam Platt did, saying, you know, sort of mocking them for having such high aspirations. Did you find the restaurant to be pretentious at all, or do you think it's just that it was an Italian restaurant trying to be 4-star?
I found it no less pretentious than any of the fancy schmancy restaurants that are the 4 stars. I call them the Lufufus. You know, they all have an Italian food. And you walk in, and there's all of that, you know, tuxedo gentility and air is about, you know, everyone's dancing around on like slippers.
Uh-huh.
And you don't hear a sound. And you know, I think when Delouvrier went over to Ducasse,
right.
and I had to review it for the Sun.
Oh, sorry, that must have been horrible.
What we're talking about is when Christian Delouvrier was the chef who went over to work for Alain Ducasse, and so these are top chefs working for a top chef.
When we're talking about how hard your job is, let's not talk about going to Ducasse when Delouvrier went there.
Can I tell you, it was the most uncomfortable meal. I mean, it was a delicious meal, and I loved Christian Delouvrier, and I thought the meal was exquisite, but it was the most uncomfortable experience of my life. I just wanted to stand up and like sit on a whoopee cushion and just get everyone to relax. People were like covering their mouths as they giggled. Like,
really?
They would be evicted ejected if they did. I was so annoyed by everybody's self-restraint. It was just killing me.
I like the sound of a little bit of laughter in a restaurant.
Yeah.
Do you know what's funny? In our restaurant, which is, I think we have a fairly nice place, and there are chandeliers, and it's kind
there
of marble walls.
There are some people
walls.
Would say it is foo-foo-y, for sure.
But what's interesting is I think once we get going, what we strive for is to have things be warm, you know, and pleasant and homey in a way. I mean, it's a formal dining experience, but it should be comfortable, and it should be a place where you feel comfortable laughing, and you do laugh. But often when we'll get somebody in early and you have an early table in the dining room, it's funny because there's a, you know, they whisper, you know, they're in the room and they whisper. And when that continues on through the meal, when people start to get, I often walk up and say, you know, you don't have to whisper. It's okay. Should I send over some champagne to sort of liven this party up a little bit? Yeah. And people, you know, people, I really need people to put their shoulders down and relax a little bit. Because
I set the tone with when I'm with my friends and they're whispering too. I'm like, I'm going to talk at this volume from now on, okay? And you're going to all have to match me, okay? Because I'm really annoyed at how low everyone's speaking in here. But I think, and I have heard it at stage left, I think the most important thing to hear besides laughter is glasses clinking. I think people should just be toasting and having a good time, even if it's a Monday night dinner. I mean, that's what dining's about, like conviviality, great conversation, laughter, fun. I mean, put in the context, where did Alto fit versus the other 4 stars to which it was aspiring? It wasn't much different. It was very quiet and formal, and everyone was well behaved, and the waiters were in, you know, an army of servers at every table, synchronized delivery of domed plates, all that stuff that, you know, like which made me think when I read Bruni's review in the Times, I thought that he was making fun of stuff that is perfectly acceptable at other restaurants.
Yeah.
One of the things I actually noticed in the reviews, you say that the service is omnipresent, and they say that the service is hovering.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a fine line, I think.
Well, you know, that was my experience, which again, it's always subjective, too. I mean, I think, I've been at restaurants where this happens, for Bruni and Platt are very well known. And especially Bruni. Bruni was, you know, when he was at the Rome Bureau, for the New York Times, his picture was in the paper. So I know for a fact from publicists that his picture's been faxed into every kitchen in New York City, and in some cases into waiters' checkbooks so that they could look and go, uh-huh, that's his profile.
Right.
I mean, it's like, who knows how many people were, you know, were hovering around him on the few visits he went. I didn't find it annoying at all. In fact, given what I expected of the restaurant, I thought there was a presence felt, but they didn't bother me.
Yeah, one of the things that Francis and I have talked about a couple of times and with other reviewers as well is that it's not always a benefit to the restaurant to recognize who the reviewer is, that sometimes you can overdo.
Just so everybody knows what we're talking about Scott Conant's new restaurant in New York, Alto, which Anthony Giglio reviewed for the New York Sun and reviewed quite well for the New York Sun in opposition to some of the rest of the press in New York City. Anthony, thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk with us here on The Restaurant Guys.
Always a pleasure, guys.
The pleasure is all ours. That's Anthony Giglio. Anthony Giglio is the New York Sun and New Jersey Life reviewer. He's also the Boston Magazine wine columnist and author of the new book, Cocktails in New York. And we're going to put up on our website a link to Anthony Giglio and all things Anthony Giglio and his website. And his book on cocktails is really amazing.
Excellent, excellent read for sure, and good for a party.
And
get you ready.
And you can come down to Stage Left, and we have some there that you can pick up. We had him autograph some just last week. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey 1450. The time is 11:55.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Shaw. Today's guest was Anthony Giglio, food writer for New Jersey Life and the New York Sun, as well as author of a book called Cocktails in New York, and a really, really great book about cocktails. And if you're throwing a party and you want to have some funky new drinks for your party, Cocktails in New York is definitely the
right one. Or to know where to go in Manhattan to get great drinks.
Yeah. One of the things we were talking about with Anthony was how important it is to be great in whatever category you're doing, you know, whether it be a great hot dog stand or a great Italian restaurant. He talked about Augustino's, which is a place in Hoboken that he really adores, and I know you've been to.
And places. How you can have a great 2-star restaurant or a lousy 3-star restaurant,
right.
You know, that just doesn't quite make it. I have to tell you, I had a great experience at a great no-star restaurant.
No stars.
No tables.
And it was great.
No chairs. Outside.
Outside.
I was in Madison Square Park the other day. I was actually walking home from Tableau where I had dinner. And you know me, I'm a foodie. There is this place called the Shake Shack, which is owned by Danny Meyer, who owns Tableau and Gramercy Tavern and Union Square Cafe. And the Shake Shack is just that. It's a little shack in Madison Square Park where they make burgers and fries and a grilled cheese sandwich and
it's just a little
yeah,
shed.
It's a kiosk.
Right.
It's a rather large kiosk.
Right.
Let me tell you something. It gets all the rage, and the reason that I've never been there before is because every time I walk by Bryant, Madison Square Park, there's a line.
A long line. The place has a line literally any time of day, every time you walk past, there's a line. We can't go there.
10 o'clock on a Tuesday night, or 10:30 on a Tuesday night, or whatever it was, that I was leaving dinner. I was full. I had a wonderful, like, 4-course dinner and a bottle of wine. And I was like, there's no line at the Shake Shack.
I got to go now.
And I was on my way back to the PATH train to come back to New Jersey. And so I stopped, and I had a burger and a shake. And I didn't finish the burger or the shake. That's how full I was. But it was really delicious, and it was real. And it was an example of, you know, if there was such a thing as a 4-star shack, this would be the 4-star shack.
I love your motto of, if it's worth doing, it's worth overdoing.
Yeah, I have no idea. I was wearing my suit. I was coming out of this really nice, fancy restaurant that I went with a friend of mine.
I'm really stuffed. Can I have a burger?
Yeah. But, you know, to have it was really a great example of what it was. It reminded me of my childhood, you know. And the ice cream, it was real vanilla. Actually, it was custard. It wasn't ice cream. Mm-hmm. Real vanilla. The burgers were great. And you had to wait. And you know what? With real food, sometimes you have to wait.
You got to wait till it's good.
And so there's a line to wait to order, and then you have to wait till it comes out. It's not all pre-done.
Which is good for you because you were digesting Tableau dinner.
Fabulous, fabulous. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.